Hey, and welcome back to Life on the Edge, a podcast focusing on what it's really like to be an entrepreneur. We discuss our struggles, our successes, how we made it through the toughest times, and who surprised us as cheerleaders. We talk about how to handle perceived success, as well as how to manage true success. It's raw, it's real, it's authentic, and it's real talk about taking the biggest leap of faith in your life. Today's episode is part of the Arete series, focusing on members of the elite Arete Syndicate Business Accelerator, founded and led by business moguls Andy Frisella and Ed Milette, who have remained humble despite their tremendous business success. And joining us today is Derek Landino from Summit Solar, and you will learn why it's important to not have it all figured out when you start, how to focus on your strengths, discover if you're an intrapreneur versus an entrepreneur, and what your starting and endpoint effect in the middle of the journey. Derek, welcome to Life on the Edge.
Thanks for having me. Great intro there. I love it. Love the interview.
Thank you. So you have been, let's just dive in. You've been an entrepreneur for 4 years officially, but you and I had a discussion about intrapreneurs versus entrepreneurs. And I know I started my career out as an intrapreneur, as for a new division of a very big corporation. Have you ever been an intrapreneur?
Yes, I have. And I feel like I actually didn't know the name intrapreneur at first. I always just said I have the ownership mindset, right? And so I finally heard it on a podcast of the differences, and I started researching it a little bit. I'm like, oh, okay. So really, I've just been an intrapreneur. And so I think in the past, I've been asked, you know, why have you been successful in some of these different positions that you've been in? I've worked for several different companies, large, small. And my answer has always been my ownership mindset, which is an intrapreneur, right? It's taking the reins and making decisions and being involved as if it is your own business, but you just didn't bootstrap that business. And having that sweat equity, making it feel like you should really feel like you have equity in that company, although you may not. And so I've been a part of multiple companies, and I've always wanted to be involved with the owners where, you know, I want to know, hey, how are we doing? Are we profiting? I want to know, should we pivot over here? I want to be a part of it because I want to make good decisions for the business, not necessarily for myself, but for the business and the growth that we're going to accomplish. And so I've learned tons, you know, as an entrepreneur. You know, at one of the companies I used to work at, I would have a sit down meeting with the owner for at least 1 to 2 hours every other day, and learning the business model and just learning those gems that you'll never get anywhere else as an entrepreneur, because you're now all alone for the most part.
Yeah, I was really lucky. I started off my career at Cox Enterprises and or Cox Newspapers, which is a division, and they were starting a new division for their websites. They didn't even have websites back then. And it was so cool because you get to shape so much when things don't exist. Like, your ideas really matter. But I always used to say we had the best of both worlds because we had that financial stability and we got a paycheck, but we got to be innovative and try new things. And I really think that it helped me develop a skill set for when I was an entrepreneur. Like, I knew how to do things right because I had been a part of something. And I've always found myself, before I became an entrepreneur, just leaning towards, after Cox, I lean towards smaller family-owned businesses that may have like 30, 50 people. I think one of the biggest ones I worked for was like 100 people. But you really get to be a part of shaping something. And I think intrapreneurship, to your point, people don't really know that word. And it gives you such a good learning ground. And for me as an entrepreneur now, and I want your opinion on this, for me as an entrepreneur now, having other people who are willing to be intrapreneurs and execute on the visions that I have for the companies that I run has been monumental. And, you know, like they are flexible enough to like kind of go along for the ride. But at the same time, I'm the one who's ultimately responsible. Do you currently in your role at Summit Solar have entrepreneurs that you're able to now mentor?
Yeah, 100%. And it's such a big difference. I believe, you know, again, we talked about this a little bit, is there's so many people out there that just want to say they're an entrepreneur and they really have no business being an entrepreneur, unfortunately. And I think that, you know, a big part of my success was because I was an entrepreneur. I learned so much from great mentors. You know, the leadership that I had was unparalleled, and it's allowed me to come in and pretty much do the same thing that I was doing before as an entrepreneur, but now I just have all the stress of the, of the employees. And so, but it's such a smooth transition when you've had mentors, you've had leaders show you how to do it the right way, even them being entrepreneurs, whether they're an executive or whether it is an owner that is an entrepreneur, it's learning the roles, the responsibilities, and understanding of how it all happens. You got it done? Excuse me, sorry.
Oh, yeah. So joining us on today's show is Derek's 8-year-old, Gianna. Hi, Gianna.
Hi.
Can you say hi? No. I think she's a little shy, but you know, Gianna is getting ready and prepping for school. And, you know, one of the things that we all know that comes with being an entrepreneur is flexibility, and it gives you a chance to raise a family. And that's what I love personally. My kids are about the same age as Derek's. And, you know, I said to him, don't even worry if like she needs to talk to you. Like, this is part of it. Like, our kids, you know, grow up in our businesses, they see what we do, and it really helps them become stronger people.
Keep looking.
Yeah. So I want to ask Gianna a question. Did she walk away? Yeah. Hey, Gianna, I want to ask you a question.
Oh, okay.
What do you, she's a master gum bubble blower. Okay. Gianna, what do you think your daddy does for a living? What does daddy do?
Go ahead. Answer. What do you think? What do you think?
You don't know what your dad does?
You know what I do.
No, I don't.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I think that's going to be lesson one, because Derek's going to tell us in a few minutes exactly what they do over at Summit Solar. So when we're talking about these entrepreneurs, and now you're an entrepreneur, one of the things that you and I've talked about that's important is focusing on your own strengths and then building a team around you who supports the weaknesses that you have. How do you find those entrepreneurs to support your weaknesses so you can focus on your strengths?
Yeah, I think number one, too, it's finding them at the right times, right? That's a very thin line to run. Sometimes financially, it's not the right time to get somebody that could be an incredible entrepreneur for you. And so it's trying to navigate it on your own as long as you can, but then understanding that, hey, it's hard to scale if I don't get somebody in here that can do this better than me. And so, you know, the way we find them, honestly, is through relationships. We're big on referrals, our networks within the industry, creating a culture and really just selling the vision of what we're trying to create. We want to be different. You know, we tell people all the time, we didn't do this to be just like every other solar company. I would have stayed at the other ones if that was the case, because we're doing this to be different. And we want people that really are passionate about creating something special, and you got to sell them the vision, you know. And I think Andy and Ed talk about this. I want to say maybe it was the first call that we had with them, is you have to sell the vision consistently to your people, and more so as well as when you're recruiting people, why they would want to come work for you. And I think that's a big piece of it, is just selling the vision of us being special and different, and letting them know that they are going to have decision-making abilities. We just brought on a regional in the Midwest, and that was one of his biggest pieces. He felt like he had to go through 8 people at the larger company he had worked for, and he just felt like he didn't really have any good decision-making abilities. Some of his ideas had to go through 8 different people. And at the end of the day, the finance team, you know, knocks it down because it's not in their budget. And so for us, I always tell everybody, like, look, let's execute here, and let's not try to save, you know, a couple pennies here and there. If it's better quality, if it's better for our people, let's just make it happen. And so, you know, I think that's a big piece of it, is making sure that you're including your people and letting them be decision makers.
So one of the things that we had talked about was you have your starting point and you have your end point, and there's the in the middle. And in the middle, you have to make decisions and you have to sometimes pivot. You know, like give right now, COVID as an example, you know, so many business owners have had to shift and change what they're doing. How do you maintain that endpoint and keep that vision alive with your employees as, you know, things that are unexpected happen, or like your entire business may shift because people can't talk to each other or people can't see each other? Like, how do you maintain that endpoint and that vision, you know, despite a winding road?
I think it's really just trying to get in front of people as much as we possibly can, in group sessions and meetings. And, one thing that we're trying to do right now as a company is have, more of a, not a channel, but more video content that we push out to our employees of, you know, hey, let's not forget where we're going, what our vision is, whether it's for this quarter or this year, and always just trying to just speak the truth of, you know, why we began this. Let's not forget our basics here on who we're trying to be and what we're trying to accomplish. And I think it's just, honestly, it's just competitive repeat to everybody, so they don't forget that. And my whole thing is really, you just have to hire really well. That's one thing that we focus on. You know, I would say your team that you hire, and especially your executive team, this happened to me recently, they have to understand your vision and they have to be able to share that to everybody else, because at the end of the day, you're not in the day-to-day. Some people are and some people aren't, but you know, for my company, I have vice presidents, and unfortunately one of our VPs, just they didn't share the vision in the proper way. And you know, we found that out. And when you get into the mix and you're like, man, this just is not what I thought we were creating here, and our people aren't necessarily happy. We had a big issue. We were actually losing people. And what I realized through it is, you can be, when you're looking at hiring somebody, they can be great at all the bullet points that you're looking to hire. But if they aren't on the same mindset as you and they don't really buy in and they don't have that same personality that you need to express the vision that you're trying to create within this company, your voice is gone the moment it gets to them.
Ooh, and, I like that.
Yeah, and so it's, I've realized, is you have to make sure that the people are the right fit, not only with the bullet points, the roles and responsibilities, but mentally, what they're trying to accomplish, and the personalities have to match. And so, you know, it was a unfortunate situation for us. And I went in and I went back into the field and I went out with our people and I started listening to them. And at the end of the day, you have to listen to your employees and you have to hold yourself accountable, just like you hold them accountable. And, you know, we've changed a lot. And my biggest pitch is bringing in people that want to buy into what we're building. And if they don't, we don't have room for them. They don't belong here. We're building something special and we need to interview really, really well to make sure that we're weeding out as many as we can to get the right ones for the company. And then it's really, when you're doing that, as long as you have the proper core values, you have, you know, expectations set, accountability metrics, then, you know, everybody should just be able to go do their job.
So that's one of the things, like in our RTA family meeting, I don't know if you've ever gotten the chance to participate in those, you know, during lunchtime, but Ben Green talks about core values. And Andy just talked about that on our last call. And Ben hires based on their core values. What are some of the things that when you are interviewing, like how do you, you know, how do you weed out? I want to get tactical with our listeners so that they can actually have some key takeaways of like the type of questions you ask or the things that you look for when you are hiring really well.
Yeah. So I think number one, you know, you really have to know the role that you're looking for. And, you know, the number one, the roles and responsibilities, you know, do they meet these things? Do they have experience? And I think more oftentimes than not, you have to ask yourself, are you willing to train them? Do you have the time to train them? And it may not be me, but you know, anybody that's in our hiring, anybody that's hiring for our company, it's, you know, a lot of times we find people that you like them personally, you have an emotional connection, but you know, they may never have done the job before. And then you have to ask yourself, do we have the proper training program set for them? And, you know, that's been a weak point in our company as a smaller family business. You know, it's, we've brought on great people, but we've failed to train them properly. And that's one of my, I think training and hiring the right people are two of the biggest things that you can build the proper way in a company for success. And so I would say number one, just making sure that you have your roles and responsibilities outlined of what they're going to need to execute on and how you're going to hold them accountable. People want to be held accountable. So I think it's important to ask them how they've been held accountable in the past and what's happened. Number when they have not hit something or they've dropped the ball. And if somebody tells you, well, I've never dropped the ball, it's like, well, I don't know if I believe that. You know, when have you dropped the ball and what happened? Did they hold you accountable? Did they not? Did you want to be held accountable? You know, asking them questions like that, because that's going to get you a better feel for when you're in when they're in that role for you and they're doing the day-to-day task, and you'll get a good idea of how they've been held accountable in the past. Me personally, I get a lot more into the relationship piece, the, you know, what they believe in. I kind of try to sell them out, like, why would you want to leave your current company? It sounds like you're in a good situation. Like, why come work for us? You know, and I try to really get that out of them to see if we're on the same page of what we're trying to create, if it meshes well. And, sometimes it doesn't and sometimes it does. So I like the relationship piece, you know, getting into their, personal space a little bit, asking, you know, their personal situations and their struggles that they've had in the past. I love people that have had struggles and, mm-hmm. and kind of raised rough a little bit around the edges, because, you know, I believe that those people have these fires inside,
yep.
these fires, and they need to, and it's trying to kind of bring that fire out into that passion and being successful. And so I like to hear the backgrounds, the stories, and I'm not so much worried sometimes as the roles and responsibilities as the team member that's, you know, maybe hiring for that position. But, you know, I want to know who they are, you know. For instance, you know, we were recently hiring for designers for our company. And I told my recruiter, I said, look, I want no judgment when these people come in for these interviews, because the guy that shows up or the gal that shows up with a baggy shirt and mm-hmm. Dorito stains, or you know, not a beard that's kind of ungroomed, I don't want any judgment, because that's the guy that I want, because he's the gamer. He's the guy that's going to actually really gamify and really have passion for the design world. And he's going to be the guy that's going to take us to that next level. So I wanted to make sure that I know I'm not going to judge, but I had that conversation. Like, I don't want any judgment. I don't care for this position, what they look like, what they're wearing. It doesn't matter to me. I want this type of person in this position. And so I think part of it is knowing who you're looking for, right? If you're hiring mm-hmm. an executive and they show up in sweatpants, it may be not the best thing. But you have to know the position you're hiring for and the kind of person that is going to fit well in that position. So I think that's part of it.
Yeah. So that's actually really great advice. One of the things that I have done as part of the interview process is I would you know, come in, like we typically do a few rounds of interviews. And in the past, like when I owned my software company, I would, you know, not be part of the active recruiting. We had a recruiter, we had like the hiring manager, whatever. And so like once they'd gone through a couple of rounds of interviews, I would come in with someone else from a different team. You know, maybe it was like a client success manager or salesperson or whatever. And I wouldn't give my business card, and I would just introduce myself by my first name. And, you know, that was sort of a gauge for me, because I felt like if they knew that I was the CEO, that they would act different than if I was, you know, just another like peer. And the other thing that it showed me was who went to our website and who researched our company, because our executive team was part of our website. And if they'd actually done their due diligence and they, you know, had researched the company and knew who we were, they would have known that I was the CEO, right? And so it helped me gauge kind of their interest level as well, if they were sincere in working. And I love what you say about no judgment. I mean, obviously growing up in advertising, I saw all walks of life, you know, tattoos, blue hair, you know, but in advertising, that's kind of what, you know, was expected. You know, like if you didn't have blue hair, you weren't creative enough, right? So, but I do think, you know, people who have grown up in the school of hard knocks are often more loyal, and they really are there to make a difference, and they're committed. One of my personal favorite stories was a very junior team member, and he came as a recommendation from one of our employees who I trusted, and it was a junior position, and he you know, he came to me like after his first paycheck, and he was like, "This is the most money I've ever made in my life." And it was like, I knew that we were making a difference in his life. And later I actually found out that his mother was disabled, and he was using his paycheck to support his family. And this was like a 21-year-old kid who was in college. And, you know, just so many things came out of that. And now he, you know, he's graduated from college, he works in IT, and I love seeing people develop and move on. My favorite thing is when people quit, because that means that like we've developed them to a point where they're ready to go to their next level. Not that I want to lose my team. Yeah, and sure. I love that you have also, I know now it's different at Summit Solar, and you guys, you know, wouldn't hire somebody that you don't have time to train. But I think it's so wise that you guys recognize that in the past, you know, that may have been the case, and now you've made an effort. I want to ask you another question. You've mentioned accountability quite a few times, and one of the things that you have said is like, what got you through the dark times is the mirror. How do you hold yourself accountable?
Yeah, I think part of it is I don't know what it is. I just naturally want to get better. When I drop the ball, I want to accept responsibility, and I want to get better. I hold myself accountable, honestly, by, you know, you got to ask people, you know, how am I doing, am I doing this right? You know, what do you think? And there's been situations in the past at my company where I've been hit pretty hard with feedback and criticism that hurts, you know, like, wow, I'm not doing a good job here, or, you know, it hurts, but it's, you know, you get better. And I think the best entrepreneurs, doesn't matter who you are, wife, husband, you can take that criticism and say, okay, you know, I want to get better. And you take it and you just roll with it. And so, you know, obviously, you know, consistent feedback, And I think a lot of people, honestly, they want to be held accountable from somebody else. But I think when you get to this level, it's sometimes hard to be held accountable because you're, you know, essentially at the top and no one's really, you know, telling you, hey, you're not doing this or that. And I think you have to get to a point where you just got to call yourself out. You know, if you know you're in a, you know, you're kind of down or you're struggling somewhere, you just got to look yourself in the mirror and, you know, call it out. And I think, you know, that was a big piece for me. That's what I did. You know, even through COVID, I started to get a little depressed or a little negative in the beginning. I just looked myself in the mirror and I was just like, dude, stop being a bitch. Like, this is what you're here for. Like, this is why, you know, you are the COO. This is why you're the entrepreneur, is because you need to navigate these waters. This is what you're made for. And you need to be here for everybody. And so I just kind of called myself out, like, dude, you know, you're being a punk. Like, step up, rise to the occasion, and don't forget this is why you're in this seat. And it's not for the day to day that is easy, right? It's situations like this and navigating these muddy waters along with people that are around you, right? You've got to use your support system. And so for me, I know when I'm slipping, you know, I know, and I've called myself out. You know, there's been times, you know, where I'm waking up too late, you know, I'm going to bed too late and I'm not getting up early. It's like, dude, step up, man. Like, you need to be better. And I just think that's naturally, I want to be really, really good. We were talking about it today in counseling. It's like, I'm sometimes it's a struggle because it's like, I'm trying to improve in every area of my life. It's like, is it ever going to be enough? When does it stop? When do you know, it's like, and so it's like, I don't know. I'm always trying to get better. So,
well, but that's a growth mindset, right?
Yep.
And you know, I want to go back to something you said about your bitch voice, because first of all, have you done 75 hard? Yes or no, not yet.
I have not accomplished it.
Okay.
I was asked to get into it. And I truly believe that you will never fully accomplish anything unless mentally you want to do it.
In. Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely.
It wasn't my decision. It was somebody else's. And I was like, sure. I'll, this was before the Ed and Andy, before, Arete. So like a year ago, I tried it.
Yeah. Okay. So you know what it is. And you do know that Andy came out with his new book, 75 Hard. And one of the things that he talks about in his book is you have two voices. You have your bitch voice, which you identified, but you also have your boss voice. And, you know, it's really, he talks about recognizing which one's your bitch voice and which one's your boss voice, and being the boss and owning your life and being in control. And that's really one of the things that I love about Arete, because you mentioned, you know, having a strong support system. Just like you, I always am trying to improve. And sometimes there is this, like, people will say, you are enough. And I'm like, I know I'm enough, but I want to be better tomorrow. And I want to be better the next day. You know, I literally have a habit scorecard where I grade myself every day on, like, specific things that I'm trying to accomplish. So how has Arete become a good support system for you? Because for me, I think it's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really, honestly, I didn't know really what I was getting into. I've done one coaching program. I went to Jesse Itzler. I'm a huge Jesse Itzler fan. Mm-hmm. My life has changed, since, you know, listening to him, about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And so, I went to a sleepaway camp of his, with a bunch of other, you know, entrepreneurs, and I fell in love with it. And I was like, man, this was awesome. And I've always been one of those guys to kind of shy away from these programs, because I'm a real guy and I always want people that are just much better than me that I'm learning from, that are kind of similar though. And like, you know, is he good in these areas that I'm trying to improve on? Maybe this guy's a great entrepreneur, but maybe he's not the best father and husband. And so I may need to say, hey, I'm only looking for this through him and not these other two things. And you know, you really, it's hard to know what you're getting with social media nowadays. And so, since getting turned on to Ed and Andy, it's been, you know, obviously these guys are real as shit, real as fuck. And so
real AF.
Yeah. And so, what I've enjoyed the most, is the specificity of what you're getting on these calls, mm-hmm. and the detail of how to execute. I really enjoyed that. Because obviously you're always soaking in so much content from everybody, and they're giving real good examples, and specifics of how to do these things. And so the note taking that I've done has been, you know, awesome. And so that's been a part of it. And then obviously just having people you can bounce ideas off of or ask questions to, and being surrounded around that success. For me, it's a little tough. You know, I'm not on Facebook all the time. I'm super busy. So I'm not, you know, on the day-to-day, I'm not like talking to tons of people through it.
Through the community, the Facebook community.
Yeah, through the community. Yeah. I love to develop relationships. I'm more of an in-person kind of a guy. I can't mm-hmm. wait for them to, you know, kind of get back to doing their, you know, once or twice a year meetups. And so, and really connecting more. I like to connect with people in person. And so I'm really looking forward to that, but the group's been amazing.
You know, I agree. I have just met so many amazing people, not only through doing this Arte series podcast, but also just in general. And what I love is that it's exactly what you said. These are people who hold themselves accountable. And because they are so good at that, it makes me hold myself even more accountable. And I just want to strive to be better and do better and make a difference. And I think that's one of the things that most entrepreneurs, you know, take on, is we are ultimately serving not only our clients, but we're serving our employees and their families. And that was, like, for me, one thing that was always on my mind, which it sounds like it is for you, that I, you know, when I worked for a company, I was just supporting myself or my family. But when I own companies, I'm supporting, you know, 20, 30, 40 families. And there are, you know, it's not four other people depending on me. It's like 100 or 150 people that are depending on me, or more than that. And that's when you talk about the stress, that's when that pressure, you know, kind of comes on, because you're like, oh, if I make the wrong decision, how is it going to impact all of these people? How do you manage stress? I know this is kind of a curveball question. I didn't, you know, prep you for it, but like, how do you manage stress?
You know, I grew up an athlete, and so I love pressure. My wife was saying today, you know, in counseling, you know, my wife and I, we go to counseling. You know, I believe that everyone should go, because it's amazing. Our daughter goes because, not because anything's wrong, but because we feel like she should have somebody to talk to as she grows and develops. And so, it's more of a preventative care type of thing, and we mm-hmm. love it. But my wife was saying, you know, it's like, this dude, you know, he performs well under pressure, and I love it. You know, it's that quarterback mindset of, you know, give me the ball, let me lose or win the game. And so, I, you know, through stress, I don't know, it's fast paced. I like to be busy. I like challenges. To me, stress is challenge. And so, you know, number one is, you know, exercise, working out, and, you know, a cigar and some wine at the end of the night, you know, a steam room, a sauna, like those things are huge for me. You know, I think that, everybody manages stress different, obviously. And, I probably don't even realize how much stress I actually have mm-hmm. because it's just normal to me. And so I just keep moving forward. Like, there's nothing you can do. Just solve the problem, move forward and execute, you know? Let's not sit here and ask a bunch of questions. Let's figure out, let's assess the situation. Let's move forward and execute. And so that's just how I manage it, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things my coach always says, is movement is medicine, you know, and just
that's great.
Yeah, movement is medicine. And, you know, I agree with you. I think counseling is important. And I, you know, I personally have a therapist. I think every entrepreneur needs a therapist, you know, just because you are at the top. People are either afraid of you or they're afraid of what you can do to them, even though you may be like the most genuine and warm and welcoming person. And that can be lonely. But I also think it's important to invest in yourself. And so one of the ways I invest in myself is I work with a team called Own It. And so Justin Rothlingshofer and Elise Golan, they are, Justin is a former athlete and he coaches, you know, pro hockey players and other pro. And it's, they coach on high performance living of exactly what you were talking about, all aspects of your life, whether it's, you know, finances, family, relationships, wellness, you know, your legacy. I mean, that was one of the questions that they asked me in the beginning was, what do you want your legacy to be? And I was like, oh man, like I'm 44. I feel like I've impacted so many people that I need to focus on impacting myself and like loving myself at this point. And they're like, yeah, that's kind of a cop out, you know? And they hold me accountable as well. So what are some other ways that you invest in yourself proactively in addition to counseling?
Yeah. I mean, besides counseling, it's, you know, reading books. You know, I love to read books. And then, you know, trying to be around people much smarter than me. I mean, I've, you know, gone through Instagram. I've started just getting rid of some of the garbage and some of those things where it's just like, man, your network is your net worth. Right. And, you know, I'll tell you one big piece of it is your living situation and where you're living. You know, my wife and I, a year ago decided to move to Atlanta. And where we were living prior, I kind of noticed that I started getting depressed. I wasn't around the right kind of people. I wasn't connecting like I always had in the past. And I kind of like fell into a weird place. And, you know, a year ago we came up with a Masogi, which is Jesse Itzler's big thing with, you know, the Asian culture does it where it's one massive thing that you're going to do for the year. That's going to just impact you greatly. And moving to Atlanta was one of them. And since I've been here, my energy is just different. I'm connecting a bunch, the culture that's out here. And so I think a big piece of it is just, you know, making sure that your household, where you're living is for you. Like, you know, everybody probably has a city or a state that's good for them. And I've just noticed it firsthand. I've been in 12 different states and been all over the country, man. The moment I got here, my energy was just different. And I noticed it. My wife's is different. My kids are different. And so, you know your situation, know where you should be situated. And don't be scared to make that move. If you're feeling like, man, I'm not connecting like I used to, the people just aren't, nothing against the area, that just I'm not connecting and I'm just not who I feel like where I should be. Don't be scared to make that move. And we did it and it's really changed. So just connecting with really good people. I mean, people that are much smarter than me. And I've learned that is like, man, I'm not the smartest guy. I don't have a college education. I'm, you know, a hard knock. I just, you know, want to work my ass off.
Hold on. You sound pretty smart. And I don't think you have to have a college education.
Yeah.
You know, point in case I'm a college dropout. You know, I know, right? Like, but for me, and it surprises people, right? Because like you, I read all the time. I've been successful in business. And, you know, I think college serves a purpose. And I think it's important for many people. But, you know, when we were growing up, college was like, you have to go to college so you can get a job. And that's just not really true. You know, you can start a business. And I got plenty of jobs making lots of money without a college degree. But it's working for people who are willing to take that risk on you. And then knowing when you're in the hiring seat to be able to take a risk, exactly what you were saying. So I had actually forgotten that you were in Atlanta. And you've been in Atlanta how long? About a year?
About a month and a half.
A month and a half? Oh my gosh. Okay. So what is your favorite thing so far about Atlanta?
Oh man, I love the people, number one. I love the diversity. I'm a very out of the box, just, you know, just different, right? I like to think I'm just different than, you know, and so I love the diversity that's here. I've met, and it's so humbling being here. You know, you feel like you're successful, but then you meet all these people. It's like, wow, like super humbling. There's just so many success stories around us here in Atlanta, whether it be, you know, in marriage and business and you know, being a husband. And so I met some incredible people already, which has been awesome. You know, I've had, you know, lunches with some great people. I'd say that the food is amazing. I eat bad food here. And my wife and I are super big foodies. And so the food, and then, you know, the lake, you know, we have a boat, so we keep our boat up at Lake Lanier. Love the lake. And so, I mean, everything, like our, it's just, we've fallen in love with this place.
That is amazing. Where do you guys live in Atlanta?
We live right outside of Alpharetta. We're 2 minutes out or 2 miles outside of downtown Alpharetta. So we're right on the Alpharetta Milton border.
So you must live off of like Mid Broadwell Road.
So I have no idea. I remember things based on
I know what you mean, based off of key places. I
have a photographic memory. So I have a photographic memory. So I don't know streets at all. Have no idea that I can navigate somewhere. And so no idea what streets are, where I'm at. I just know I'm about 2.5 miles outside of downtown Alpharetta because I run there. And we're right by Cogburn Elementary and Hopewell Middle. So mm-hmm. We're right around the corner from that.
Do you know I live in Atlanta?
I thought I seen somewhere that you did.
Yeah. Guess where I live?
I'm going to assume, just because you're smiling, I'm assuming it's somewhere near Alpharetta or Milton or something like that.
Yeah, I live a mile and a half from downtown Alpharetta on the way to Milton.
Oh my gosh.
I know. I'm your neighbor.
What a small world.
So, I'd forgotten that you lived in Atlanta, because I was actually going to ask you about that. So fun little story, because I think it is relevant to what you were saying about like find your place, like find your city. And I'm actually eighth generation Atlantan. Okay. My family is on both sides, my mom and my dad, my grandparents, like my great grandparents, like everybody's from Atlanta. And so I have tons of cousins and, wow. You know, my maiden name is Samples. And so like, if you go up to Cumming, like where my grandfather's family is, like everybody is a Samples and there's roads named after us or whatever. And for me, that was suffocating. Like in my 20s, like, and Atlanta hadn't, you know, really grown the Olympics, you know, and stuff. And I knew everybody. And my friends always joke about like 6 degrees of Jen Samples, because I knew everybody. I'm just a connector. And so I first, you know, moved away from Atlanta to Raleigh. And then my second move was to St. Louis. And then, and, you know, I'd always come back to Atlanta. And then my next move was to New York. And then I moved to LA, and I lived in LA for almost 10 years. And so, you know, I'm really showing how old I am at this point, but we moved back to Atlanta 4 years ago, and every one of those cities that I have lived in has given me something different. You know, when I lived in New York, I loved the pace. I loved the intellect. I loved, you know, just what we were doing. It was just like this raw, like feeling. And when I lived in LA, you know, I became creative. I mean, I was already, the creative side of me came out, you know, that's where I started building businesses. You know, when I lived in St. Louis, I got really involved because I didn't know anybody in St. Louis. So I, you know, started playing kickball, and I, you know, played indoor soccer, and I really sort of built a community that way. And so I think it's just interesting that different cities speak to you in different ways. Like the city where I feel electric is San Francisco. Like when I go to San Francisco, it's like, these are my people. When I go to London, I'm like, these are my people. But Atlanta is like this nice combination where there is that like electricity from the tech industry, which I'm in. You know, there is a little bit of rawness, you know, and especially from the music industry. There's people here who are creative. So Atlanta kind of brings it all together for me. And of course, it's home. And, you know, ain't nothing better than mama's cooking, you know? Yeah. And so, you know, I love that you love my hometown. And I think Atlanta is actually a great place for entrepreneurs to be. And yeah. So welcome to the ATL.
Thank you. Yeah, since moving here, I'm getting ready to launch. I'm starting to build an app. Found a guy that's done that, built and sold a few apps, and then looking at purchasing another company as well here in Alpharetta that I found. So it's been exciting. And again, I've enjoyed every minute of it. So it's been nice. Growing up, I moved every 2 years. I had a really rough childhood. And so naturally, I've always kind of bounced all over the place. And this was kind of like the final, we're done, no more. Let's make this our last move. So
it's a great place to make a last move. And It's a great place to raise a family.
It is. Yeah, schools are great.
Yeah, they really are. So Derek, thank you so much for joining us on Life on the Edge. I have one last question that I ask all of my guests. Tater tots or French fries?
Yeah, so totally French fries, and but it has to have ranch dressing with them.
That's exactly what Laura Farrow said the other day. She's like, fries with ranch. Yeah.
And if you can put some like garlic salt or some Parmesan on there, that's even better. So
I never thought about Parmesan. Garlic salt I could totally see, but Parmesan, that's interesting. Yeah. All right, cool. Hey, thank you again. I'm so proud to be a fellow Arete member with you. And I hope you come back and Gianna comes back to Life on the Edge.
Yeah, we'll need to teach her some communication skills a little bit.
Hey, she's got the right dad for it.
Yep. So I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.